Hello everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, your weekly guide to the weird and wild world of comics. I'm Andrew, and as per usual, I'm joined by my co-host, Rob.
Hello!
So, how are you doing today, Rob?
We are officially 200 episodes old now.
Boy, it only feels like we've been doing this for 400 episodes.
Yeah, we're a bit long in the tooth now, aren't we?
That's a weird saying, isn't it?
Yeah, I never understood long in the tooth. I mean, it's one of those bizarre sayings that have been around forever and everyone knows what you mean when you say it, but when you examine it, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Because that's not how biology works.
No, it's not.
Don't just mistake us for trees. Anyway, I feel like that's as good a celebration of our 200th episode as any, to just immediately go off on a completely unrelated tangent.
Yeah. We're not ready to collect our podcasting pensions just yet.
Nah, well, it's bloody Boris's Britain, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe for not much longer.
We're not going into that. We're not going into that. Instead, we have another game of politics and chance to deal with.
Yep. So, for today's episode, I thought there's a lot of hype about that Joker movie that's coming out soon, isn't there, Rob?
Yes, there is.
So, I thought we could talk about the Justice League, because, you know, that's a DC movie that begins with J.
Well, not just a DC movie that begins with J, it's a super team that begins with J. And was the Justice League the first super team, or was it that Red Circle or Dark Circle comics team, or was it the Avengers?
That's some words you've said, Rob.
I'm trying to remember.
But also, actually, no, the first... Well, don't know what the first ever superhero team was. I'm assuming it was DC's first team, which was the Justice Society of America.
The Justice Society of America. Were they actually called the Justice Society at the beginning, though?
Yeah, they were.
Okay.
Because it was actually... the Justice League is supposed to be a reboot of that team.
Yeah.
It's just the idea being that, you know, society sounds a bit old-fashioned and stuffy, so we'll make it a league instead.
Yeah, because I remember the Justice Society of America... And then somehow in the middle, in between Justice League and Justice Society, there was the All-Star Squadron?
I actually don't think there was. I think the All-Star Squadron might have been... Because this is one of the many confusing things about DC. Is it like in the 80s, they kind of like brought the Justice Society back, but did a bunch of stuff that was like set in Earth 2 where it was still like the 1940s. Because again, This is the part of the episode I've done zero research for, but I believe there was at one point like All-Star Comics, where a lot of these heroes came from, and that's maybe where the All-Star Squadron comes from.
There was All-Star Comics, but the All-Star Squadron was introduced, if I remember right, the very early 80s. And it was after they'd started the Justice League of America, you're right about that. But some of the characters who were in the All-Star Squadron, I remember Hawkman was part of the All-Star Squadron.
Well done.
And I think Captain Marvel was part of it as well. Or Shazam, as he's called now.
No. He's called Captain Marvel.
I called him Captain Marvel first.
And
you can't
Carol
be upset
Danvers
with him.
Is also called Captain Marvel.
Yeah. I found some of the original members. There was Johnny Quick, there was Robot Man, Tarantula, The Shining Knight, Liberty Bell, Dr. Fate, Starman, and Amazing Man.
Boy, this is not at all what the episode is.
Nope. Because we were talking about the Justice League.
Yes. So thank you, Rob, for this, derailing us into nobody's favourite DC superheroes. Something tangent. Something. Hey, remember that time Justice League had a movie?
Yes.
That didn't go too well.
No.
But we're going to talk about some ideas for how the DC might potentially do another one.
Yes, we are.
Which ideally wouldn't be bad, even though I did kind of like it.
Well, there were certain ways that the Justice League movie worked, but also other ways that it just didn't.
Oh, God damn it. I said, well, thank you, Rob. You tried. And another thing that tried was the Justice League movie.
Do you want to do that and we'll cut it in?
God, no, No, it's too late. It's been 200 episodes, Rob. Everyone can just sit in my shame with me.
You do know none of this is getting cut now.
I know.
Right, anyway.
What are we, a professional podcast?
No, complete amateurs, man. We have standards to maintain.
We do precisely 2 cuts per episode.
Yes.
One the rambling at the beginning before I introduce, and the rambling at the end when we forget to stop the recording.
Yeah. Right, okay. So, Justice League from the movies, roll call. Cyborg, who kind of got added in after the fact.
Yeah, he was there.
Wonder Woman, who appeared in Batman vs. Superman and then just kind of hung around for some reason. She's got her own movie franchise that's doing quite well. She didn't have to stick around. Let's be fair.
Yeah, she probably had better things to do, but, you know, sometimes you gotta throw your buddies a solid like that.
Exactly. That's how I envision it for Wonder Woman. She's like, the boys just need more help. What can you do?
Yeah, what's that? You need me to help you stop a weird scrotum-faced stag man. Fine.
Superman was, I never understood Batman versus Superman. I mean, we have to go back to Batman versus Superman to explain part of Justice League. And just, why? Look,
can I make a big admission?
Yeah.
When I was thinking about this movie and preparing the notes and everything, I completely forgot that Batman v Superman existed and that whole movie was a sequel to it.
Yes. Because the whole point of Superman being dead, I mean, that didn't need to happen for a start. You could have just done Justice League as, look, there's a big threat. Superman and Batman have resolved their differences. They've become friends, as they do in literally every other iteration of their beginning as DC's odd couple, because they are, when you get right down to it.
Well, I feel like that was an editorial thing, because I think, like, in Zack Snyder's original script, like, it was supposed to be the Justice League versus Superman, and then, like, at the end, he kind of comes back to his senses, which would make more sense as to why he needed to die and then come back.
Yeah, that would make so much more sense. And I've seen, you know, on the internet, on YouTube, there are lots of people who've done their own versions of the Justice League movie. And I've watched and read some of their ideas, and some of their ideas are pretty interesting. So there is scope, there is a lot of...
Oh, Flash and Aquaman, they were there as well.
Yeah.
You didn't actually mention them.
Yeah, I forgot. But anyway, there are a lot of people who are heavily invested in the DC fans, and they would love to see the Justice League movie actually being good. But there are lots of people who actually rate the Justice League movie worse than Suicide Squad.
To be fair, I can kind of understand where that argument comes from, in that Justice League is very obviously, like, just stitched together from a bunch of different things.
Yeah. One of the reasons why they rate it lower than Suicide Squad is because where Suicide Squad, you can abjectly hate Suicide Squad, but you feel nothing for Justice League. Nothing. It's like Mick and all the X-Men movies. I honestly have difficulty remembering a lot of the Justice League movie, and I've seen it 3 times.
There was the very funny joke where the Flash trips and he lands in Wonder Woman's cleavage. Do you remember that, Rob? Do you remember that? That's a funny joke. It's a funny joke, and it's good, and it's not at all horrible and pervy and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And maybe Joss Whedon is a bad, bad man.
Yeah, I'm not even going to mention that. You know, from the trailers, I remember the bits from the trailers more than I remember the Justice League movie. And I remember the race between Flash and Superman at the end, when I was just marvelling at the lack of hair on Superman's upper lip.
Boy. But yeah, so speaking of Superman, I think one of the big things you need to consider for, like, the next Justice League film is it might not have Superman or Batman in it.
Yeah.
Because it seems very... I mean, I think we finally opened the box on Schrodinger's Batman, and we can say that, you know, it's definitely, it's not going to be Ben Affleck. He's gone.
Yeah.
And it seems like Henry Cavill's probably not going to be Superman anymore.
Yeah, I think he's had enough of it as well.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the first interesting question is, if they do a sequel, do you just have them not part of the team, or do you recast them? Do you, you know, kill them off, or just say, yeah, you know, Batman, he's off in Gotham, and Superman, he's doing his Superman thing?
To be honest, do you know what I'd do? If it was me, I'd reboot it completely. I'd use Wonder Woman 1984 to introduce the whole idea of an alternate timeline and have Wonder Woman slip into an alternate timeline where she's still the same. Everything about her is still the same, just the world is different. Batman and Superman didn't have a big punch-up, and just have them there automatically.
Yeah, maybe so just cast completely new actors in the roles then.
Yeah, and just have new actors in the roles of Batman and Superman, and then just have her meeting up with Batman and Superman, and she knows their secret identities. So make her the focal point of the new Justice League movie. She then basically knows who Batman and Superman are, and they're going, well, who the hell are you? How do you know this? And she says, I'm from an alternate reality. We were friends. You died. You disappeared. We saved the world, though.
Okay, yeah, I guess you could even maybe do that pivot off the whole, the quote-unquote nightmare sequence.
Yeah.
You know, where it's the future and Superman, he's a bit of a bad bloke.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool. See, I bet my idea was kind of going in a different direction of just doing that, kind of just say that Superman and Batman are off elsewhere, because here's an interesting side tangent for you.
Yeah.
In the original Justice League comics, Superman and Batman kind of weren't really supposed to be like main members of the team.
Oh yeah, they weren't, were they?
Yeah, no, there was a big thing with Mort Weisinger and Jack Schiff, who were the Superman and Batman editors, kind of not really wanting to share the characters. And so they were just initially intended to be kind of guest stars. Actually, a big reason why Martian Manhunter was put on the team.
He was the Superman replacement, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Which is neat. But like then, you know, those restrictions kind of relaxed a bit, and so they just had all seven of that original Justice League.
Wasn't that also why they included Green Lantern as well? Because Batman was kind of he was the detective character, and the Green Lantern was basically a cosmic police force.
No, I think you know, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, and Aquaman, they were all just, these are DC's six most popular heroes, we will make a team with them.
Well, once upon a time they were the six most popular heroes, until that Green Lantern movie.
Yeah, oh, Greg Lantern. But yeah, so what I'm thinking you do is, you kind of have the Justice League, sort of in between movies, like, went their separate ways a bit.
Hmm.
And so now there's some like a new threat that comes up. And so Wonder Woman kind of reassembles the team, which gets, you know, Flash, Cyborg, and Aquaman. But then she can't get Superman or Batman, so she ends up having to rope in Shazam. I called him Shazam, even though I very pointedly made a whole thing of his name being Captain Marvel. But yeah, get him on the team as well.
See, I like your idea.
And then also maybe like Green Lantern or someone.
Well, I like your idea because you can do that, because she can basically bring in other characters. So she could literally bring in Green Arrow, for example, who could basically take on the Batman role to a degree, because he's basically just Batman with arrows, isn't he?
Yeah, see, I'd prefer to have him like move a bit more away from that, maybe focus more on the sort of modern-day Robin Hood type stuff he does.
That's the thing. I'd like Green Arrow to focus more on that as well, but
because we've already had so many years of, look, this is Batman but arrows.
Yeah. Atom already exists on the CW universe, as I've taken to call it. Flash is already part of the movie team and the TV universe.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. DC now just seems very relaxed about having multiple versions of the same characters running about.
Yeah. Green Lantern, I mean, Martian Manhunter is on the CW one, but I'd love to see Martian Manhunter on the main roster of the movie team as well.
Yeah, plus it'd be cool to have him on a team where there's not a Superman.
Yeah, but I think of the other characters, of the other members, the sub-members of the Justice League, see...
sub-members.
There are certain characters that I'd love to see, right? Elongated Man.
No.
Oh, come on.
I'd, It's just, the thing is, Rob,
even
I think it's a bit of a stretch.
Oh,
it was great because you didn't see it coming.
No, I didn't. Hot Girl, because you can introduce Hot Girl in the movies, and then that cues up a Hawkman Hot Girl movie, doesn't it?
Yeah, boy, I know we all want that Hawkman movie.
No, we don't. But what would be interesting is a Zatanna movie.
Yes, absolutely.
I'd love to see Zatanna, even if it's just a cameo in the next Justice League movie. Diana goes to her for advice on magic or something like that, because who do you go to for advice on magic? You go to somebody who knows, a magician, right?
Yeah, I mean, Zatanna is rad and she should be in everything, and so I fully support this plan.
Yeah. Other characters that they can introduce even just as cameos, because they did this already, this way of introducing them, in Batman vs. Superman, didn't they? The little security camera shots.
Oh no. No, probably. We are not going to have another movie where one of the characters stops for 5 minutes to watch a bunch of potential movie trailers.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying they did this already. I'm saying you don't want to reuse that idea. What I was going to say was there's characters like Captain Atom. Captain Atom is part of the military, isn't he?
Yeah, I think it's weird that they haven't used him yet, because I feel like the DC Universe as it has kind of set up this idea of like the military wanting their own answer to Superman. And so that would be like a very natural way to just introduce Captain Atom.
Yeah, and the thing is, in Man of Steel, they could have introduced Captain Atom in Man of Steel. He could have been the military's own secret weapon. And when they basically go to arrest Superman, he has Captain Atom in front of him. And obviously he's more powerful than Captain Atom. But he has a conversation with Captain Atom, and Captain Atom realises he's not an enemy.
I mean, I feel like from a filmmaking perspective, I prefer just having that first Superman movie being just Superman.
Okay. Alternate take, then.
Because like, we are saying things like, I feel like that is a big failing of the MCU, though, is sometimes it overly needs to just stuff in, and here's another character that we're introducing.
Yeah. Alternate take. How about then, in the new Justice League movie, you open with Captain Atom, who is basically part of the military, and they're fighting something, and then, you know, you see just a giant, a big fist come out and hit him, and the screen goes dark.
Or a big tentacle come out and hit him.
Whatever you want, tentacle, fist, whatever, but it's Captain Atom who you see at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, okay, maybe lean more into the idea that there's a bunch of superheroes now.
Yeah, and then you can basically have, like, Booster Gold on YouTube trying to become internet famous. You know, doing his whole walk-around vlog thing.
Yeah, that works. Because I feel like, ideally, what I want the Justice League to eventually be is just, like, Justice League Unlimited, cartoon series.
Why do you think I'm going through all of these sub-heroes?
Yeah, exactly. So we can just get to that point where it's just, yeah, there's, like, 100 different members and the team's just whoever's about at that point.
Yeah. That, I think, would be amazing. Animal Man is an interesting character for the Justice League. Metamorpho. Power Girl, I'm not sure of.
Power Girl, I feel like you need to do a lot more like Superman type stuff before you can introduce her.
Yeah. There's Fire and Ice, who I remember from the Justice League, who...
Yeah, because I hear she's, you know, Brazilian.
Yeah, don't.
That was some amazing sensibar limbo.
Yeah, that's 90s comics. It's, yeah. It doesn't bear thinking about. Do you know what I did like, though? In Young Justice, one of the things that I liked was towards the end, and this is a bit of a spoiler if you haven't seen the Young Justice series or the latest series, I think it's season 4, was it?
No, season 3.
Was it season 3? I can't remember which season it was.
But... Yeah, I feel like it's had very long seasons, so it's weird to think that it's only on, like, the third one.
Yeah. One of the things I liked, he's a character on the TV shows already, and I'd love to see him in the main Justice League movies, is Black Lightning.
Heck yeah.
I'd love to see a Black Lightning movie. I'd love to see Black Lightning in the main Justice League. He's one of the older heroes. He's got an old head on his shoulders. He has wisdom that the younger heroes don't have.
See, I feel like I like him because he's basically like Luke Cage on the Avengers, where they're both these very kind of older, more down-to-earth heroes.
Yeah. Because
I like having that character who's specifically more focused on, you know, we need to do more to, like, help the community and stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, be an inspiration to people.
And that's what I like about Black Lightning, because that's his whole ethos, that's his whole goal, that's his deal. More so than Superman.
Yeah, because I feel like he kind of becomes more approachable than Superman.
Yeah.
Superman's kind of the person you aspire to be and who you hope shows up in times of crisis, but Black Lightning's like the guy you can go to with your problems.
Okay, I have to ask, which version of Blue Beetle would you have, though? Would you have Booster Gold's best buddy, or would you have the other version, the Scarab version?
It's tough because I really like both those characters.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of like the idea of having like one movie where it's Ted as him and Booster becoming just the best friends of all time.
Yeah.
And then like maybe he retires and just becomes like tech support or something.
Oh.
Or like Tybee get the Beetle instead.
Oh, wow. Oh, try this out for a size. You have a Blue Beetle movie, right? Because, hey, it worked for Marvel and Guardians, yeah?
Yeah, I feel like that's just something we need to get used to in this day and age of there's no character too obscure to have a multi-million dollar movie.
Yeah, I'm throwing this out there. Have a Blue Beetle movie with Ted as the Blue Beetle, yeah? And Ted's an inventor. He does tech, right? And that's how you introduce Booster Gold. Ted basically invents something and it detects some obscure time event, and he basically goes, and him and Booster get into a fight, which obviously Booster wins, and Booster wins by punching Ted in the face. And then Ted goes, what are you punching me in the face for? Who are you? And Booster goes, I'm Booster Gold. He's like, who? You know, in the same way as...
Yeah, I'm Booster Gold, turns to camera and smiles.
Yeah, and then you have like Star-Lord moment from Guardians where he goes, who?
Basically, what you're pitching is Booster and Ted's excellent adventure.
Yeah, Booster and Ted's excellent adventure. So Booster and Ted become friends by hitting each other in the face, which is very Booster Gold and Blue Beetle, right? That is their relationship, in a nutshell. And then you have, eventually, Ted gets tired. Through the course of the movie, they have all sorts of adventures. And then Ted says, look, I'm getting a bit old for this, but I've invented this, and he shows the Blue Scarab, which can then introduce the next Blue Beetle. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I think that works.
So I've pitched a Blue Beetle movie, DC, and I think it'd be a good one. Because you introduce two characters, and you've got Succession. And because it's Booster and Ted's excellent adventures, you can introduce so many different heroes. Because Ted, obviously, making tech, he's going to be... He could be like the superhero's repairman kind of thing. Because that's where he is in the comics as well, isn't he? Anytime something breaks, they take it to him to fix.
Actually, that could work if maybe, like, they team up with, like, a future version of the third Blue Beetle.
Yeah.
And then the movie could end with, like, them tracking him down in the present day and giving him the scarab.
Yeah.
Or, actually, I guess you probably want to keep the whole it being an alien scarab thing.
Well, that's why I said Ted invented it. But what you can say is that the information was basically beamed into his head from an alien race. But that's something you reveal much later on, not in that movie. Like, second Blue Beetle movie or one of the team movies, you introduce this whole idea that the technology for the Blue Scarab was beamed into Ted's head. He didn't know where it came from. He just thought up the idea and thought it was his own invention.
Anyway, Justice League.
Yes.
Who should be the villain? Answer me that, Bob. Answer me that right now.
Oh. I know who the villain should be. And I said that twice because I'm excited. Because it fits in. You know, I said alternate reality in Wonder Woman 1984, yeah?
Yeah. I know exactly who you mean.
Dr. Destiny.
I was going to say Dr. Double X.
Who?
It's funny because exactly that was the joke, Rob. We had Dr. Destiny doing weird timey-wimey shenanigans.
Because he's done it in the comics and in the cartoons already, where he sent the Justice League into an alternate timeline where they were evil, horrible, horrible people. So what if he sends Diana by herself into an alternate timeline where the Justice League didn't exist, where the superheroes never had anything to connect them together?
Yeah, or similarly, you could have, like, Kronos.
Yeah.
And basically kind of make it a bit like Avengers Endgame, where just the timeline ends up getting altered.
Yeah.
obviously, based on the first movie, I know what they're setting up is kind of a sort of Legion of Doom slash Injustice League type thing.
Yes.
Which I think would be cool to see, just maybe not necessarily with Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor.
Yeah, I can't take him seriously as Lex Luthor.
Yeah, it's just, like, he'd kind of work well as just a different villain. Like, if he was, I don't know, the Riddler or something, and also maybe the script was a bit better.
Mm. Completely left field, because he wasn't part of the Justice League as far as I'm aware, but I'd love to see a Starman movie.
That's, I mean, I assume probably based on the James Robinson run.
Yes, absolutely.
That is not a comic I've read.
Oh, you've missed out, man.
Quite frankly, I refuse to on moral grounds.
Why?
Because I always like to kick the first when I haven't read something.
Anyway, leaving that to one side, we've mentioned Dr. Destiny. Who do you think should be the villain?
I do quite like the idea of like the Legion of Doom or something.
Hmm.
Because very specifically, it's not something that Marvel's done.
Hmm.
Like, they've never really done a villain team in a movie. I think that might be a good way to set themselves apart from it.
They have, but failed. But we don't talk about Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, but that's not the MCU, I mean.
All right, okay, the MCU haven't, no.
No, but I think my main pick is actually kind of very left field.
Oh?
It's a group called the Hyper Clan, and this was kind of the villain team of the first arc of Grant Morrison's Justice League.
Oh, right.
Yeah, well, basically, they're a new group of heroes who arrive on Earth and basically say, you know, we're replacing the Justice League now. And start just, like, rounding up and executing, I mean, basically, first of all, villains, but then, like, even anti-heroes and vigilantes and stuff, until the Justice League has to, like, fight back against them.
Yeah.
And I think, first of all, I feel like that's a good way to kind of maybe kind of do a soft reboot of the Justice League. You know, just this idea of, like, they've been replaced and so have to reform to kind of take their place back.
Yeah.
And also, secondly, the twist at the end of that story is that the Hyperclan are all actually white Martians. And so that's kind of how you could introduce a Martian Manhunter as well.
That works.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Because that basically, you introduce Martian Manhunter as the one who's standing against them, don't you?
Yeah, like he can be the one who arrives and kind of lets the Justice League know, I actually know these guys, they're bad news, so we've got to team up and stop them.
I like that. So we've got two good ideas for the next Justice League movie, plus a pitch for Booster and Ted's Excellent Adventures.
AKA Blue and Gold.
Yes. I like it. Right, okay, we're going to take a break there.
We are indeed, and then we'll be back with what we've been reading.
Yes.
Hi there, I'm Robert Rankin, and you're listening to the Geek Show. Oh, yes.
Have you ever been reading through a stack of comics and thought, maybe I should see what this Arkham Asylum game is all about? Or been playing Marvel vs. Capcom and felt like you were at a real disadvantage since you didn't know who half the characters were? Well, Play Comics is the show for you. I'm Chris, and each episode we take a look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. So whether you know the comics and want to know how all these games work, or you know the games and want to find out where all this craziness came from, go check out Play Comics at playcomics.com or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back, and now it's time for the things that we've been reading. And Andrew, take it away.
Yep, so first up, I have been reading Savage Sword of Conan, The Cult of Kogathun.
See, I love these names.
They are. That is full-on sword and sandals naming. So this is written by Jerry Duggan, with art by Ron Garney, colours by Richard Eisenhove, and letters by VC's Travis Lanham. And also cover art by Alex Ross, because why not? Why not do the best covers?
Yes.
This is Marvel's other Conan series. This one following Conan's adventures in what I guess is kind of his present. So yeah, this sees Conan actually saved from a shipwreck by a ship full of slavers, who he of course invariably ends up smashing to death with a big old sword. But while he's killing said slavers, he comes across a mysterious golden chest with a snake symbol. So, taking the chest, assuming it to be full of gold, Conan runs off and opens it, only to find it's full of sand. And just as he's about to, you know, storm back off and do some more stabbing in, he gets a vision of a magical treasure map showing him where untold riches can be found.
Okay. And
that eventually leads him to the land of Stygia, where he must enter the vault and find this treasure, whilst dealing with the cult of Kogathun, a kind of weird snake wizard man. He's bad news is what he is.
Hang on, isn't this kind of like the plot from the first Conan movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger? Wasn't he a snake wizard as well?
I just remember it was James Earl Jones.
Yeah, because the symbol for him was like the snake eating its tail in kind of a figure of eight.
Yeah, but this guy's more like literally, like he's all scaly and he's got fangs and he can poison people.
Oh, right, okay. Right. Oh, right, okay. That makes more sense.
Yeah, there's no place for your metaphors here, Rob. And yeah, for the most part, it's a fun little romp. It's just a nice adventure of Conan and his compatriots, just, you know, slowly they're making their way through the vaults, avoiding death traps, getting in fights. I will say, though, it suffers a little bit from being written for the trade.
Hmm.
Like, you can tell this maybe wanted to be, like, an issue longer than it is, because the ending just feels a bit abrupt. Like, there's certain twists that happen that feel like they kind of just come from nowhere a bit. And then it just ends with kind of Conan being like, right, done with that, and right off to the next adventure. The art is very good, though.
Okay.
It's all got a rough scratchiness to it.
Yeah.
Which is more... Remember when I was doing the other Conan book and I said that I was surprised Mahmoud Azra was doing the art?
Yeah.
I think this is definitely the art I was more expecting for a Conan book. And it works really well.
All right.
It is. It's the kind of book that does make me a little bit conflicted, though. So I feel like in a vacuum, this is a fun little read, and I'd highly recommend it. But it's also, I'm kind of quite aware of Marvel's business practices to just shove as much as we can into the markets to try and flood the comic racks.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of hard to say, oh yes, definitely what the world needs is two separate Conan series. But it is good, though.
Okay.
I think this is what we call an ethical quandary.
How do you mean?
Just as to whether or not I actually want to recommend this. Whatever. You know what? Marvel's business practices are terrible. But we are just consumers who have to live in that world. You want to buy the good Conan book? Buy the good Conan book.
That seems fair enough.
There we go. I've done it. I've solved capitalism.
Good for you. Good for you.
I haven't, though, have I?
No, you haven't, because speaking of capitalism, Fairy Tale 100 Year Quest.
Yeah, this is.
Right.
That's a book that has been made for an audience.
Right. Now, I know after Eden Zero, I said, or Eden Zero Volume 3, I said if I saw Hiromashima, then I'd want to punch him in the balls. And really, Fairy Tale 100 Years Quest, you know, it's made me rethink that. Because I said I may want to punch him in the balls, and now I definitely do.
Okay, good, because for a brief moment I had just this image of you on a mountain in a cowboy hat holding your fairy tale close to your chest going, why can't I quit you?
No, that's Hiromashima doing that. But, you know, I know exactly why he can't quit Fairy Tale. And that's a certain magazine group that he belongs to. I'm not going to say who they are, but they keep forcing him to make more Fairy Tale, which is not a good thing, because guess who else is stuck in
do
that?
Do they force him, Rob? Do they force him, or do they say, Hiromashima, would you like some more money?
Well, that's one way of forcing him. There's someone else who's also in that category, and that's Akira Toriyama, who basically does Dragon Ball. I'm sure he wants to do other things other than Dragon Ball, but they won't let him.
I feel like Akira Toriyama, though, his entire process for writing Dragon Ball is just writing the words, and then they shoot a laser beam, highlights that, Control-C, Control-V, 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 chapter done.
Basically. So anyway, this is set after the end of the original Fairy Tail series. And so Natsu and the rest of the Fairy Tail Guild have beaten Zeref, they've beaten Acnologia, the big evil human dragon type, whatever the hell he is. And so all of the big bads have been beaten and everybody's happy, everybody's fine, the continent's saved, Fairy Tail is saved, everybody's having a good time, it's party time, it's Miller time. Everybody chill.
So it's the tail end, if you will.
No, it's not. Unless you're talking about a different type of tail, then it's not. Remember when I was talking about Eden Zero and I said Hiromashima has a problem with reusing ideas in that he doesn't know when to stop reusing old ideas?
Probably. I'm pretty sure you just started talking about aliens making women into chairs and my brain just started leaking out my nose a bit.
Yeah, we won't talk about that because I'll get angry again. Anyway, Fairy Tail, 100 Years Quest, is basically what happens if, after Fairy Tail has ended, we introduce a new story, but this time we have these new characters who've joined us, one of whom is suspicious. Oh, I wonder what could be suspicious. And how does it link back into whatever the hell Natsu and Gray and Lucy and the rest of his team are doing? Oh, what are they doing? They're challenging the legendary 100-year quest, which is only called that because after it passes century, people start calling it the 100-year quest. They have to go to the Guild of Magia Dragon, if I remember rightly, or Magia Dragon, and they have to apply there at the first ever guild created on their continent to take part in the 100-year quest. And they have to sign contracts that bar them from talking about anything that they see once they undertake the 100-year quest, and they have to understand it's very, very dangerous. And what do they have to do? They have to go and seal four dragons. Or was it five? I can't remember. Four dragons, definitely, though. They have to go and seal them. Guess what's special about these dragons? Well, not one, not two, not three, but all four of them are on the same level as Acnologia and of the same type as Acnologia. Do you see what I mean when I said he keeps reusing ideas? So the whole of Fairy Tail was a big fight to see if they could stop Zeref and Acnologia. Now, Natsu and his friends, because they've beaten Acnologia, they have to go on the 100-year quest and beat four dragons that are of the same type as Acnologia. Basically the same power level, I'm assuming. And while they're doing this, there's another guild who are completely made up of dragon slayers of the fifth generation who call themselves Dragon Eaters now. And they're led by a guy who's covered in bones and skulls. And they are looking for the water dragon god and they want to kill him and take his power or whatever the hell it is. And so, yeah, in amongst all that, you have one of the new members of Fairy Tail, who's just joined, who's highly suspicious and is being investigated by Gajil and various others. I know I've said a lot of stuff there, and non-Fairy Tail fans will probably be confused as to what I've just said, because I threw a lot of names in there that you've probably never heard of. And guess what? Don't worry if you've never heard of them. Be happy that you've never heard of them. Don't worry, be happy.
I mean, I've just been playing The Girl from Ipanema on loop in my head for the past 5 minutes.
And now it's Don't Worry, Be Happy Now. Ooh, ooh, ooh,
ooh, ooh, ooh, ooh, ooh, ooh. Yeah.
So, that's how I'm going to leave you with Fairy Tail 100 Year Quest. If you've not read Fairy Tail.
With a musical number.
Yeah, with a musical number. If you've not read it, don't stress. Don't worry. It's not worth catching up with just to read 100 Year Quest. If you are a fan of Fairy Tail, well, read something good, please.
Oh, that's a... No, I was going to say that's another chunk of the audience lost, but I think any Fairy Tail fans probably stopped listening to the show a long time ago. Joy is good.
What?
Kino's Journey, The Beautiful World.
Yes, I know. See, there.
Ibukashi Omiya.
There you go. Okay, all you fairy tale fans, read Kino's Journey.
So yeah, should I keep on with the review?
Yeah, keep going.
Okay, cool. So this is, another chapter about Kino on her journeys throughout the vague, nondescript landmass on which she inhabits.
See, it's so easy to forget that Kino's actually a girl.
It is, which is actually a thing that happens quite a bit in this chapter. So this one, interesting, was the past few volumes, past two volumes even, have been split into kind of two stories. This one is all one story. It's called Colosseum. This finds Kino. I think first of all, we get a nice bit where she's just bombing down her motorrad, Hermes, just on a straight road, going at, like, his top speed. Well, he's complaining that, you know, he's going to be shaken apart if we go any faster. That's just, it's a nice bit about, you know, testing your limits and just the joys of going fast. Only for Kino to arrive at a customary, you know, get to a new country, spend 3 days there, leave again. And there's a slight hitch with this one, in that it turns out this country has a rule where as soon as you enter the borders, you're automatically enrolled in a to-the-death blood match sport to fight for the right to be a citizen.
Okay. Tourism must really suck in that place.
Yeah, I think that is the implication. Despite not really being into it, Kino, she decides to take part after the guards start joking about a married couple who took part in the competition. And it was the husband, the wife, she fought the husband in the first round, but immediately surrendered so that they wouldn't have to kill each other, only for the husband to get murdered in the next round. And kind of as the guards are laughing at that, Kino whips out her revolver, blasts all their hats off the shelf, and says, yeah, I'll take part. That's cool. It's what I like about this series is that you can go from like just these very quiet, contemplative journeys to this, which is like a really big action-focused story. Because it is just about her kind of going through. It's basically a tournament arc, you know, so it's her going through a series of matches, working her way up to the final. And it's really well done. Like, the action in this is just so, like, smoothly done. Like, it's very clean. It's very dynamic. I like it a lot.
Cool.
Like, there's a great bit where it's Kino's first fight. So, and basically the idea is, before each fight, she always asks her opponent, you know, why did you come to this country? And two, would you like to surrender? And obviously her first opponent, you know, he's about 7 feet tall, built like a brick house. Just wields a massive ball and chain. So he kind of, you know, laughs her off to surrender, starts spinning the ball around, screams, die. And you've got a great bit of like him screaming, die. And just Kino just stand there with her usual kind of pleasantly blank expression. And then you see a big bang as Kino like whips out her gun, shoots from the hip, shoots the chain holding the ball, and it just goes flying off into the distance. And then just get the guy going, did you shoot that off? Good to Kino, same expression. Yes, I shot it. And so that's why it went flying? It did go flying, didn't it? Will you surrender now? Yeah, that sounds good. In general, it's really fun. Because, like, Kino's whole thing is she specifically refuses to kill anyone.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like she's got no choice. So it's lots of cool fights of her, like, trying to defeat the opponent without killing them. Even a really good one, but it's like the semi-final, where she ends up fighting another woman who's like a pro sniper. So it just goes from, like, being these kind of very Western-esque quick draws to just a full-on firefight. With, you know, ducking behind cover and lots of bullets flying everywhere. Yeah. It's another really good chapter of Kino's journey.
Excellent. Wow.
That's a great bit at the end where Hermes the Motorrad gets in an argument with a talking dog. I love it that Hermes the talking motorcycle is there. A dog that can talk. That's ridiculous.
Please say that the dog tried to urinate on Hermes.
No, and quite frankly, it's weird that's immediately where your mind went to.
Well, it's just kind of parked motorcycle, dog walks up to the parked motorcycle, marks its territory, walks off. Do you see what I mean?
Just do the last review, you filthy boy.
Well, you know, incontinence is one of those things that you run into as you get older. And my curse seems to be that I have to deal with all of Marvel's elderly people these days, of which there are several. Okay,
that's where you're going. I was wondering if it suddenly turned into one of those weird adverts where it's like, you know, it's the guy, like, and he's dancing about the house. And he, you know, picks up a dog and spins around. And then just the voiceover, erectile dysfunction affects 40% of men over 50.
Yeah, it wasn't that. But as I was saying, I have to deal with the majority of Marvel's elderly these days, of which there are several. There was Old Man, soon to be Dead Man Logan. There was Old Man Hawkeye. There was Old Man Hulk, for crying out loud. And now we have Old Man Quill, or Old Man Star-Lord, whatever you want to call him. And this is collecting Old Man Quill numbers 1 to 6, and it's called Nobody's Fault But Mine. It's, well, it's written by Ethan Sachs, with art by Robert Gill and Ibrahim Robertson, colours by Andres Mosser, letters by VC's Joe Caramagna, and cover by John Tyler Christopher.
So Ethan Sachs, the same guy who did the Old Man Hawkeye?
I can't remember.
I think he might have been.
He might have been. Because this is all taking place in the same Old Man universe as the other old men. Because they're all old men. And old men, as you know, congregate together in the pub, tell stories about the war, and, well, whatever jaded, twisted view you have of old men. This starts off with Star-Lord on his planet of Spartax, and this is then when Star-Lord was married and he had two kids, and they're trying to fight off the church of whoever it is, who basically they raid planets and carve symbols onto planets in the shape of an Ankh kind of thing. Something
might be the Church of Universal Truth. I think they're a thing.
Yeah, I think it's the Church of Universal Truth. And they have a god, don't they?
I think so. I know they were like run by the Magus, who's like evil Adam Warlock.
Oh, no, it's not that church. It might be similar to that church, though. They just call themselves the church or whatever it is, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, there can probably be two different space churches.
Yeah, well, this one bombs the crap out of planets and carves their symbol onto continents. And so that's how Star-Lord lost his
family. Are you sure they don't carve their symbol in continents? Funny. I brought it back.
funny man. But actually, it kind of works because Star-Lord now is very, very drunk, obviously in desperate need of less drinks and maybe a lavatory. But he is then visited by Old Man Rocket and Old Lady Mantis and Old Man Drax and slightly elderly Gamora, or middle-aged Gamora, as I'll call her, who basically arrive and tell Peter Quill it's time to go and save the galaxy. And Peter's upset because nobody was there when his family was getting killed, but then Rocket throws it back in his face and says, where were you when Groot needed you? At which point Peter can't answer. And so you have them all boarding their ship and heading towards a distant planet. I wonder what distant planet it could be. Could it be a distant planet where nobody knows what's going on the far edges of the universe? No, obviously not. This is comics. And as they're going, they're also being chased by Gladiator, who is now a member of the church and follows the Dark God, who we'll find
does
out.
Does he still have a big purple mohawk, though?
No, it's a smaller purple mohawk, but it's still a mohawk. But Old Man Gladiator is basically still there. And so they are pursuing Star-Lord, who they thought was just a drunken wreck and now has been pulled back into this twisted game of cat and mouse with everybody else, and they have to fight off all sorts of weird creatures, and they end up on Doom's Earth in New Latveria, or whatever you want to call it, where food is being handed out by a Doombot who then proceeds to slaughter half the crowd when someone throws something at him. You have various other things that show just how brutal and vile this world is. where all the heroes have died and everything like that. And it's up to Star-Lord and the other Guardians of the Galaxy. Well, it's up to the Guardians of the Galaxy to save the day, but it's up to Star-Lord to recover his senses and fight back against the man. But in the middle of this, you have Fing Fang Foom, who is being controlled by Doctor Doom and wants to eat people, but he can't. You have all sorts of things going on. You have Viv Vision, who's missing half her face, or a third of her face, a quarter of her face, and she is the leader of the resistance. You have the Shi'ar, wherever they are, Gladiator Shi'ar, isn't he?
Yep, he is.
Yeah. You have the Shi'ar people fighting against the Guardians of the Galaxy, or the Elderly Guardians of the Galaxy. What's an Elderly Guardian called?
It's nearly 9 o'clock, so I can't think of anything pithy.
Yeah. Anyway, while they're doing that, Novgor is getting the crap kicked out of them, and various other things are happening. I'm not sure how I feel about this. I know that this is supposed to be leading up to some universal cosmic truth, because that's what everybody in the who follows the Church of the Dark God believes, and I know who the Dark God is. I'm thinking, well, if you are a member of the Marvel Universe and you think Bleep is a Dark God, then, you know, more fool you, because everyone else knows exactly what that character is. Everyone else in the Marvel Universe knows exactly what that character is. But anyway, leaving that to one side, Old Man Quill. I didn't mind Old Man Hawkeye to a degree, but I think it got a bit too whiny and a bit too preachy after a bit. With Old Man Star-Lord, I think it just, you know, can't Marvel just say, look, here's an old man, he's happy. You know, he's had a long life.
I'm tired of that whole doom and gloom universe.
Do you see what I mean? He's an old man. He's happy. He's had a long life. He's had a good family. He's got good kids and grandkids. They come and visit him every weekend. You know, he's taught these grandkids how to fish, everything like that. He's happy. He's just telling them stories of days when he used to be a superhero. Why can't we have an old man series like that? That celebrates...
Old woman squirrel girl.
Or old woman squirrel girl, yeah. Where she's just basically enjoying her silver years. Why not have an old man series that celebrates the old superheroes instead of forcing them to come back out and fight?
Old woman squirrel girl, colon, the silver flying fox. You're welcome, Marvel.
Yes, I like it. And on that note, we are at the end of the show. So, if you've enjoyed this episode, you want to listen to more, then you'll find all of our episodes of 4Panel, and indeed all the episodes on our network, on our website, which is thegeekshow.co.uk, or you can listen to them on whichever podcast provider that you prefer, whether it's Audioboom or Podbean or Acast or Spotify, whatever. We're available on all of them. And if you listen through anything like that, leave us a rating, leave us a review. It helps us with exposure. It helps us to improve as well. Also on our website, you'll find various reviews and of video games and movies and things like that. So check them out. You'll find our shop and our Patreon as well if you want to show your support. And if you want to get involved, then you can send us an email, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk, and let us know how you want to get involved. Until next time then, I've been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
And we will see you all later.
Thanks for listening.